We have an exciting 2 days ahead of us, and I'm delighted to be here. And Jose asked me to talk about the Lasker International Retinal Research Foundation initiative in vision science. The meetings that we held on restoring vision to the blind in 2012, 2013, and 2014, our findings, which sort of summarized how far we've come in restoring vision to the blind. And then he asked me to point out some of the unanswered questions that hopefully we'll begin to answer today and tomorrow. Now, the Albert and Mary Lasker Foundation of New York City and the International Retinal Research Foundation in Birmingham, Alabama, entered into a 10-year collaboration that began in 2008 with the goal of identifying knowledge gaps in vision research and developing innovative strategies to advance retinal and vision research and accelerate discovery of sight-saving treatments. The initiative's first report was called Astrocytes and Glaucomatous Neurodegeneration, and it was published in 2010. The initiative then examined diabetic retinopathy, of course, one of the leading causes of visual impairment and blindness in the world, and it issued that report in 2012. It was entitled Diabetic Retinopathy, Where Are We, and A Path to Progress. In the fall of 2012, the initiative undertook a bold new investigation to examine potential breakthroughs to restore vision lost as a result of retinal degenerative disease. The initiative chose to ask which approaches are most promising and most likely to benefit the greatest number of blind individuals. Given the breadth and complexities of this topic, the initiative first invited a small group of scientists who later formed a steering committee for the initiative to meet at the Institut de la Vision in Paris, and we were hosted very generously by our chairman today, José Sahel. There we looked at the major research efforts underway and clarified the objectives of the effort. How best can we exploit the newest insights and cutting-edge technologies to reestablish light sensitivity and restore visual perception damaged or destroyed by retinal degenerations? The steering committee that was then formed also identified key scientists to participate in the initiative. Two workshops were subsequently held in Woods Hole, Massachusetts in the summer of 2013. That was followed by a plenary session at the Howard Hughes Genelia Farm Center in March 2014. We published our report at the end of 2014. Here it is here. It was published not only in print form, but also in ARVO's open access electronic journal, Translational Visual Science and Technology, TVST. Now, the report is readily available from the TVST website, and I also brought a few copies along in case some of you, like me, like something to read with paper. Now, the notion that restoring vision to the blind is possible has long been thought to be fanciful. However, beginning back in the 60s, vision scientists began to investigate the possibility of restoring vision to the blind by activating neurons in the visual pathways beyond the eye, namely the visual cortex. And one of the pioneers here was Giles Brinsley from Cambridge, England. Now, those early experiments showed that it is possible to elicit visual sensations in blind humans by electrically stimulating neurons in the visual cortex. Now, the major cause of untreatable blindness throughout much of the world today is retinal degenerative disease. Most often, because of a loss of photoreceptor cells, but also, especially in glaucoma, as we all know, a loss of the retinal ganglion cells, whose axons, of course, form the optic nerve and carry the visual message from the eye to the rest of the brain. Now, because most retinal degenerations cause blindness by destroying the photoreceptors, Much emphasis in the quest to cure blindness has so far been to restore photoreceptor function in blind eyes, or to substitute for the loss of photoreceptor function. And most success so far has come from two approaches we found. First, retinal prostheses have been developed that electrically stimulate the second or third order neurons in the retina, namely the retinal bipolar or ganglion cells. Indeed, two types of prostheses are now approved and have been successfully implanted in blind human patients. They have, of course, restored some light sensitivity and also have provided those patients, in most cases, low acuity vision. And that is a huge advance. Now, the second approach has been successful for patients with specific gene defects that severely compromise photoreceptor function and consist of injecting a viral construct containing the normal gene into the eye, thus replacing the defective gene. Again, substantial improvement in vision, especially in light sensitivity, has been demonstrated in these patients. Now, a newer approach, not yet tested in humans, but I understand will shortly be tested in humans, is in essence a combination of the above two approaches. Namely, by imparting light sensitivity to retinal neurons via genetic means, and this, of course, is called optogenetics. Genes that code for light-sensitive molecules linked to an ion channel or pump are introduced into various retinal cells, and that can be readily done these days. So far, most often bipolar or ganglion cells. And in animals treated this way, the treated cells are stimulated by light, causing the opening of ion channels or the activation of ion pumps, both of which permit ions to flow across the cell's outer membranes, thus electrically activating the cells. This technique also has been applied in blind animals with some remaining cone cells, but which had lost light sensitivity because their outer segments had degenerated. Now, once light sensitivity was restored to those cones, downstream retinal pathways were activated, and the animals showed visual behavioral responses. Now, another approach to replace damaged or destroyed photoreceptor cells is to transplant healthy photoreceptor cells into the eyes of blind animals. This strategy, unfortunately, has had limited success so far. The number of transplanted cells that survive and integrate into the retinal circuitry is quite limited. But some restoration of electrical activity recorded from the eyes does occur, and the animals do show some behavioral responses to light. Stem cells, which in theory can differentiate into any cell type, have also been introduced into blind eyes, both animals and, in a few cases, human eyes. But again, so far, the success has been very limited and largely undocumented, especially with regard to the experiments with humans. Investigators now, however, are inducing stem cells maintained in culture to differentiate into photoreceptor cells and then are injecting such cells into eyes whose photoreceptor cells are degenerated. And this approach appears quite promising and may indeed in the end be more successful. Now, in addition to direct deleterious effects of a disease process or gene defect in the photoreceptor cells themselves, such defects can also occur in the associated retinal pigment epithelial cells, and this can cause photoreceptor death, as we all know. The photoreceptor cells and overlying pigment epithelial cells are in very close attachment, intimately connected, and of course they depend upon one another to function. The isomerization of vitamin A to generate the 11-cis retinal, which is needed to regenerate the visual pigment molecules after they've been exposed to light, occurs mainly in the pigment epithelium, as does the phagocytosis and digestion of spent outer segment material. And as we all know, the photoreceptors are turning over all the time. And finally, the recycling of lipids occurs in the pigment epithelium. compromise of any of these retinal epithelial cell functions results in photoreceptor death in both animals and in humans. Now, the gene therapy to correct retinal pigment epithelial cell defects or transplantation into diseased retinas has been accomplished with promising results. Indeed, the first gene therapy treatment in humans was for the correcting of a gene in the retinal pigment epithelial cells. Retinal pigment epithelial cells grow readily in culture, and they're easily transplanted, relatively easily transplanted. Unlike photoreceptor cells, they do not need to integrate into the retinal circuitry, but only interact with the photoreceptor cells, which they do quite readily. Now, another approach stems from the fact that it has long been known that non-mammalian species such as amphibians and fish can regenerate retinal cells endogenously, but mammals, including humans, cannot. Why can these cold-blooded vertebrates do it, but we generally cannot do that? This is an intriguing question that is now receiving substantial attention and is seeing some success, even in mammals. If we could regenerate our retinal cells, presumably we could cure not only blindness caused by photoreceptor degeneration, but blindness caused by degeneration of any of the retinal neurons, including, of course, the ganglion cells. In fish, for example, new retinal neurons are formed throughout life, and the axons of the newly formed ganglion cells extend to the rest of the brain, and they make appropriate connections. In mammals, not only do ganglion cells usually not regenerate ever, but their axons do not regrow in large numbers after the optic nerve is damaged or cut. From what cells does the regeneration in non-mammalian species occur? Now, this may differ among species, but certainly retinal pigment epithelial cells and the Müller glial cells appear to be involved. In fish, for example, the formation of new retinal cells occurs throughout life and comes from a region in the retinal periphery called the marginal zone. These cells may derive from the retinal pigment epithelium. Whereas in the fish, when the retina is damaged, new retinal neurons derive from the Müller cells that de-differentiate and appear to behave like stem cells. That is, after de-differentiation, these cells first proliferate and then generate progenitors for repairing the retina. And the repair is usually complete. Now, in addition to discussing the approaches outlined above, we also considered other topics that may impact the various approaches being undertaken. Many devices have been developed over the years to help those who are visually impaired and have low-level vision. Can some of these devices be of use to those who have low vision restored as a result of implanted visual prostheses? Another example would be for a device to allow a retina made light sensitive via optogenetics, for example, to adapt over a range of intensities and to have greater sensitivity to light. Something optogenetically induced vision so far cannot accomplish. Another area we considered is that of neuroprotection. Neuroactive substances that protect neurons and often slow down degeneration in a diseased retina. Can such molecules be used in conjunction with other restorative approaches to enhance their effectiveness? So, for example, we know that after photoreceptors degenerate in a retina, the retina undergoes a substantial remodeling. And this could, of course, limit success when restoring photoreceptor function by any means. Could neuroprotective factors be helpful here? There is some hint that they might be. Now, a final topic that we discussed in our initiative was that of endpoints. What is the best way to measure the return of visual function in previously blind patients? The gold standard, of course, to evaluate vision ordinarily is visual acuity. How many lines on an eye chart can a person read? But there is much more to vision than acuity, although acuity is certainly critical if we are to restore reading driving, face recognition, and so forth in blind individuals. Now, our report consisted of 8 chapters. The titles were The New Age of Implanted Visual Prostheses, Optogenetics, Gene Therapy for Vision Loss, The Road Ahead, Stem Cells and Transplantation, Endogenous Regeneration, Neuroprotection, Advancements in Visual Aids for the Visually Impaired, and then finally, Evaluating Visual Function, Endpoints. Now, each chapter described where the approach was at that time. That was March 2014. And it also indicated what the major questions were that needed to be addressed. And we made some suggestions as to how to go about answering those questions. I suspect over the next 2 days, a number of these questions will be addressed and hopefully answered. Now, the first topic to be discussed today is one the Lasker Initiative spent almost no time on, reconnecting the eye and brain. But there has been considerable focus on this possibility in the past few years. So, for example, is it possible to transplant a whole adult human eye? The eye surgeons say that it's technically possible to do this, but the biggest obstacle at the moment is the regeneration of the optic nerve. Whereas we've known for many years that regeneration of axons in the central nervous system, including the optic nerve, can occur under the right conditions, the number of axons that regenerate is only a few percent of the total number of axons. Which ganglion cells are they derived from? We don't know. And do regenerating axons make the correct connection centrally? Again, something that's not known. Another critical question is, how many axons need to regenerate to provide substantial vision? Do we need all of them, or just a very small percent of them? If cochlear implants provide a lesson, it might not be many that we need to restore substantial vision. These are critical questions to answer. And if the possibility of transplanting an adult human eye is ever to become a reality, or we learn how to endogenously regenerate ganglion cells. And another question with regard to transplanting whole eyes, is there enough healthy human eyes to transplant? So I look forward to a substantial discussion of these questions and many others that I'm sure we're going to hear about this morning. Now, the second topic we discussed today is optogenetics, which the Lasker IRF initiative did focus on. A number of questions were raised and only partially answered. Which cells to target? Ganglion cells, bipolar cells, or remnant cone photoreceptor cells? Each has its advantages and limitations. We concluded that perhaps which cell to target might depend on the disease, how far it has progressed, and so forth. And a related question is, where in the retina should the target be? The central retina with its high acuity, or the peripheral retina, which presumably might be easier to deal with? Another issue we struggled with was which is the best animal model to use to begin to do those experiments, mouse, dog, pig, or primate? Again, each model has its advantages and disadvantages, and each has its limitations. What is the present thinking? Hopefully we will hear something about these issues today. The last topics to be discussed today, optogenetics and retinal circuitry and neuromorphic vision, the Lasker Initiative did not discuss at all. So I'm looking forward to that discussion. Tomorrow morning, we start by discussing prostheses, prosthetics, and how they might be improved. In 2014, the best visual acuities achieved were 2,500 to 20,000. Have we made progress there? Clearly, though, visual acuity is not the whole story. But vision that is useful in daily life is very important. And again, something that tends to be overlooked, the psychological benefit of providing some vision to the blind cannot be overlooked or overstated. Another issue I suspect we will hear about is image pre-processing before the retinal cells are stimulated. Can that be improved? Where are we in that quest? And should we be thinking of implanting prosthetic devices in youngsters known to have a blinding disease but not yet blind? Their brains, of course, are much more plastic than they are in adults. And it might be much more successful to be implanting early rather than late. And perhaps a related question is whether implants are capable of slowing degeneration, for which there's some evidence that electrically stimulating neurons in a retina degenerating can slow down degeneration. Now, we also discuss tomorrow morning gene therapy, and we all know of the great success that has been achieved there. Where do we presently stand with regard to gene therapy? We will hopefully hear about that in the morning. Now, corrective genome editing therapy has also very much come to the fore, especially the CRISPR-Cas9 system, which we heard just a bit about during the Lasker Initiative in 2014. It was just coming upon the scene then. Again, I look forward to hearing the latest on that approach to correcting retinal degenerative diseases. And finally, before the concluding lectures tomorrow, we will discuss systems pharmacology. And whereas, as I've already noted, in the Lasker Initiative, we did consider neuroprotective substances and their targets, we did not discuss small molecule therapies for blinding disease. This obviously is an area of enormous potential and interest. And again, I think it will be an illuminating discussion. Now, we'll also hear tomorrow afternoon about the Audacious Goal Initiative of the NEI from Paul Sieving, the NEI director. This initiative is focusing on optic nerve and photoreceptor regeneration, as well as ganglion cell replacement and the reconnection of neurons in the visual system. All critical issues if we are to develop therapies for blinding diseases and the restoration of vision. The areas of research we will discuss over the next 2 days, as well as many others underway to restore vision to the blind, are most impressive and certainly gives me confidence that restoring vision to the blind is a reasonable and realistic goal. Now, several participants of the Lasker Initiative are here today and may wish to add to my comments or perhaps correct them. And that includes Jose, who's here, Eberhard, sitting somewhere, Ernst, I don't see Ernst, but it's going to be here, Botan, Jean, Serge, Dan, and Paul. They may help answer any questions you might have, letting me off the hook. Thank you very much for your attention.